Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. This week, I get to welcome somebody that I know well. I have a lot of fun with him. He's an amazing businessman, and he's just a good guy all the way around. His name is Bobby Darnell of Construction Market Consultants, and in 2010, his Building New Business blog, which is a sales and marketing blog, was nominated for a Best Construction Blog contest and won. Bobby is the founder and principal of Construction Market Consultants Incorporated, an Atlanta-based consulting firm that assists business entities in the AEC and retail industry with business development, management, marketing, sales, profitability, research, process management, and business partnering. And I'm going to have Bobby explain just what AEC is. Construction Market Consultants' client base includes local, regional, and national general contractors, architectural firms, software and building product manufacturers, subcontractors, industry publications, and other related entities. He knows a little bit about the construction market. When Bobby is not writing about his passion for building new business, he likes to spend time with his family by heading to the mountains, watching movies, playing and singing in their music room. You ought to see his Facebook page. It's amazing. He also enjoys playing guitar, golf, tennis, training Brazilian jiu-jitsu, backpacking, magic, and studying philosophy. And Bobby, you forgot to tell me about your coffee blog. We're going there.
We'll get to that.
We're going down that road. What we're going to do today is Bobby's going to talk about the construction industry, but not, you know, the part where you put up a post and you hammer something into it. We're going to be talking about how to build your business online, literally, how to gain more recognition of the fact that you're in business in your local vicinity. So please join us in the chat room or on the phone during the interview if you would like to ask questions. And Bobby, good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Denise. Thank you for that great introduction.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, the check's in the mail, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure you have my correct address.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, before I get too far off, because we have so much to talk about, tell our audience a little bit about yourself before I just start jumping in with a lot of questions.
Well, you made a good point about we're not going to be talking about, you know, pouring concrete or erecting steel. That's sort of one of the ironies of what I do for a living is I'm the last guy you would want on a job site. I got out of college. I got involved with a company called Construction Market Data, which was not what I wanted to do. It was a startup here in Atlanta that dealt with construction data by talking with architects, engineers, owners. And when I say owners, I mean retailers like Walmart and Lowe's and such as that, and just developing a dialogue with them about their construction projects and the processes and this, that, and the other. And we would put that into a database and follow the projects through the design phase, the bid phase, and then the awarding of the major subcontracts. And so when I found out about the job, I found out through a roommate, and I said, well, I'll come to work for this company till I find something I like, because my degree was in finance, and this was not necessarily a finance-oriented business. Well, that lasted for 13 years. It was, without a doubt, one of the greatest joys of my life was working here. We grew the company from that one office in Atlanta to 60 offices in North America. And I spent the better part of 12 years on a plane every other week going out and opening new offices and working with companies that we purchased and doing transitions. And it was just a lot of fun.
And, you know, this happens. I think you're making a point that a lot of us are really kind of finding out. We go to school, we work, you know, we get our degree, and a lot of us never work in our own discipline. And it's
yeah.
true. But what I think that what happens is that it sets us up for something else. I mean, yeah, we have this knowledge, but now we can go do something else. We can still fall back on that knowledge.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I did with CMD. I learned a lot about the people that bought our leads used it for business development. They would mm-hmm. a building product manufacturer. There's a certain timeline in the design of a building that they've got to get in and make their pitch to the architect to say, hey, you need to specify my window or you need to specify my carpet. And so through that, I learned about how construction companies, if it's an architect, an engineer, a general contractor, or a subcontractor, where on that timeline of the project that is the sweet spot for them to get in and make their pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And so the company, you know, we grew it to about $180 million in revenue and sold the company in 2001. And it was like, what do I do next? So, because the new owners, I left this part out, it took about 6 months for them to tell us old timers to hit the road.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I knew I had this very, very, you know, niche market of awareness, if you will, of the construction industry and how these companies buy and sell. So I had some severance and I had some money from the little bit of stock I had in the company, and so I wasn't in a panic to figure out what I was going to do next. And so I said, I'm going to take off 6 weeks and just play golf. Well, that lasted about 3 days, and I was just going crazy. So
I tried the same thing when I quit my last job. So I am taking at least a month, and I'm not going to do a darn thing. I broke out in hives.
Yeah, same here. I just couldn't do it. And so I thought, well, what do I do? And so I said, my job will be finding my next job. And so I went to my home office, and I said, well, I know data, so let's look at some data companies, and maybe they'll hire me. And so I poked around and went to Dun & Bradstreet, their data company, and got on their website, found a couple of names with some email addresses and shot them my resume. And then I got a call about 2 weeks later, said, hey, we saw your resume. We'd like to hire you as a consultant mm-hmm. to come up and take a look at one of our companies. And I didn't know what to do. So I ran out and bought a book called How to Be a Consultant. I mean, literally, that's the name of the book. And so I put together a proposal, and they said, come on up. And it was I was hooked because I got to go mm-hmm. in and just kind of look at what I felt they needed to tweak, and they liked what I suggested. And so thus Construction Market Consultants was born.
And see, I love this story, and I really wanted you to tell this story because, I mean, look at the economy right now. Look at what is going on in the United States of America and globally right now. And so many people are, they can do what you did or they can go into full-fledged panic. So I love the story because it really points out that, you know, yeah, you may have a little bit of money. You may not have a job, but you can certainly go work at something you love. You can create your own business and, you know, your own niche, I guess, if you will, but it's time to do it, I think. It's time for entrepreneurs to pull up their panties and get to work.
Yeah, I agree. And a lot of times these situations force people to become entrepreneurs.
Exactly.
We live in the northeast part of Atlanta, and there's a little newspaper, a local newspaper, that you go to a restaurant, you'll see it by the door. And I picked it up and read it, and it was just a little local newspaper that talked about the activities in the area. And when I read the column of the guy who did it, that's basically what he's talking about. He said, you know, he mm-hmm. got laid off, and he had to reinvent himself. And now the paper's
right.
a success, and it's just endearing to hear and read about stories like that.
And they're not uncommon. And I think if people were to get out of their discomfort zone just a little bit, you know, pull your head out of the fog, look around a little bit, find out what it is that you really, really love, and then just darn go do it. Seriously, just go do it.
Exactly. And
there's
you know,
no proper way to do it, and I think that's what holds people back because there's no blueprint.
Well, I was fortunate in, when I was at CMD, we sort of got to be, and we created this word, an intrapreneur, in that
mm-hmm.
we, you know, we had this massive, massive database of information. Mm-hmm. And if somebody could think of a different way to slice and dice it than the owner and founder of the company, he was all ears. And we did that.
Right.
We were able to say, you know what, if we could create this list here, let's say of buildings that are 20 years old, then we could go to, you know, some of the building product manufacturers that make roofing products and say, hey, here's a list of buildings that's 20 years old. What
mm-hmm.
would you pay me for them? And so I got to wet that a little bit before I started out on my own. And and the companies that I work for, that a lot of them are that way. It's the construction industry. And to go back to your introduction, the AEC part of my bio is architectural engineering and construction. Mm-hmm. That's the umbrella of the companies that we work for. And it's a very artisan industry. You've got a lot of people out there that, quote-unquote, work for the man and said one day, you know, I can install HVAC systems as good as Joe, so I'm going to go out on my own. And they've got that skill set, but where they struggle a little bit is with the running of the business and then the marketing mm-hmm. of the business.
Right, right. And that's huge because not everybody's a marketer. I mean, you may be the best, you know, air conditioning repairman around, but if you don't even know enough to get a decent business card, word of mouth is really not going to get you where you need to be.
Exactly.
It will to some degree, but you're never going to grow any bigger than just, hey, Joe Bob can fix your air conditioner, call him.
Exactly. And we worked with, one of my very first architectural clients was a company that I used to call when I was at CMD, and I'd never heard the story behind the falling out, but one of the partners left and hired us to help them get his business started, and the guy was a phenomenal architect, and part of our contract was to, you know, develop a marketing plan and a business plan and help him with this, that, and the other. And so when I got to know the guy a little bit more, it's like, okay, what I want you to do is the last thing that we're going to do is we're going to have a sit-down discussion, and we're going to actually role-play, and you're going to make a presentation on your company. Now, here's a guy mm-hmm. who, you know, sat at the top of the ivory tower, so to speak, and just designed. I mean, the business
right.
was brought to him, and he was used to that. And so now he's not one of three names on the door. It's his name alone. And so we set this up. He wasn't in Atlanta, so we had to do this on one of his trips to town, and we met at a restaurant. And the role play sort of was I was a businessman who had a 50-minute commute, and I found a piece of land, and I decided after crunching the numbers, I want to build my own office building, and you know, rent part of it out and this, that, and the other. And so he was aware of it. So if we sit down and we, you know, catch up and. Okay, now let's go. And I said, so tell me about your firm. I've got my short list down to three architectural firms. You're being one. Why should I hire you? And this is just me and this guy sitting at a restaurant role-playing, and he pauses and he stops and he looks at me and goes, I can't do this.
He didn't know how to present his elevator pitch, if you will. He didn't know how to present. How do I want to say it? It's right at the top of my, you know, when you know what you really know and you're very, very good at it, you're excited about sharing it with people, his value proposition. I just had a brain freeze there.
Yeah,
he did not know how to present his value proposition so that you, the client, were brought in going, oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, he couldn't even present it to a fake prospect.
Oh, no.
You know, so we had to work on that. And
right.
So, one of the little sayings we've come up with in the 10 years, our company is 10 years old this year, is I've never met an architect, a general contractor, or a subcontractor who started their own business because they wanted to be in sales.
No kidding.
And so that's good thing for us, because that's what we do.
Right. And I think a lot of people don't understand. You know, like, sales has a bad connotation. Excuse me. Nobody wants to be sold to. I don't.
No.
If you're in my face and you're demanding practically that I'm going to buy your car, no, I'm not. I may want it, but I don't like you, and I'm leaving.
Yeah.
But that's just me. I'm kind of cranky that way. But truthfully, people don't want to be sold to. Marketing, however, and you and I are going to go into that. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice this week for some reason.
Okay.
I think it's all that yelling at inanimate objects. But, you know, people expect to be marketed to, but in that marketing has to come what's in it for them. And it sounds to me like that's what you're teaching your people to do.
Yeah, it's you know, if you go back to my, I'll call it my previous life at CMD, our core mm-hmm. product was a weekly publication. And you would get it, and if you were, and 70% of our subscriber base were subcontractors, so they would get our publication on Monday, and they would go through there, and they would, you know, highlight the jobs that they wanted to keep their eye on or they wanted to submit a price to. And our sales teams were guys that were in the next room, and with, you know, a room with no windows, just smiling and dialing and calling people and asking if they wanted to see a sample, and if they didn't, they'd hang up and they'd go to the next guy. And so that concept of sales was my first concept in the real world. And I thought, I want to have absolutely nothing to do with that. So if you look into a crystal ball then and say, well, I see into the future and you're actually going to be a sales consultant, I would have told you you were crazy and you needed to get your money back on that crystal ball. But the sales process is for what we do is so different than that. It's so relationship-based. And the greatest sales guy in the world is not going to be able to call a business person and convince him to hire them to design a building if they don't need a building. So it's all about understanding what their needs are and understanding how you can educate them on how you can fix that problem. You're right. Nobody wants to be sold. Can I hear you, Denise, if you're talking?
This Denise, may I help you? Damn it. Bobby, are you there?
I'm here.
We had a lightning strike. Everything went dead.
Well, at least it wasn't me.
It wasn't you. I was trying to find my mobile phone so I could call you and say what happened, and all of a sudden everything came back on.
I'm just rambling on.
Well, I was too, and then I realized I had no internet, no phone, no nothing, but I'm glad that you took the call. So.
I thought, oh my gosh, I put everybody to sleep.
No, we were having some tremendously bad weather. It's just been crazy, crazy weather. And, you know, I saw lightning out of the corner of my eye, and then boom, you know, there went the thunder. Oh, boy, and then everything just went. I probably should have gone outside to see if anything was smoking, but I didn't dare. No, anyway, we're back.
We're back. All right.
We're back. Thank you for hanging on. I'm really glad you're still on the call.
Sure. Like I said, I would just keep on talking.
Okay. Well, where did I leave you? What did I miss?
I think we're in the middle just talking about how that one early client that we had that just great at design, great at what he did for a living, but just was not necessarily the best at promoting or selling that. And then we also talked a little bit about how neither one of us like to be sold. If you go to look at a car, if you go to even a bookstore, you don't want someone in your face and trying to get you to buy or to sell you this or sell you that. And that's true with what I do. I don't consider myself an in-your-face salesperson. I like to just educate people. If they have a need for what, you know, I'm selling for myself or for my clients, then I think we'll do a pretty good job of helping them understand that.
Right. And you mentioned something earlier, too, about relationship marketing, which is really what we're doing. We used to be in the agrarian age and the iron age before that, the Stone Age, and I don't know how many ages, you know, the world has progressed through. Right now, I believe that we're in the relationship age, you know, with social media marketing. And I don't just mean social media, I mean social media marketing.
Exactly.
If you do it well and you do it properly, which means that you do exactly what you just said, you offer up information, you educate people, you help people. I find, and you and I have talked about this, that online entrepreneurs in particular, are very, very helpful people. We're generous.
Absolutely.
You know, if you need a question asked, we're going to answer it for you. Is there anything in it for us? Yeah, we're helping somebody else.
Well,
so, you know, if you have questions, for crying out loud, ask them. You would be surprised at how generous people really, really are.
Well, you're exactly right. And through my blog, I encourage people to you know, email me or just even give me a buzz.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to somebody the other day that they said, you know, I read your last blog and I really wanted to talk to you, but I don't have anything in my budget to talk to you right now. I said, like, look, here's kind of the way it is. If it's raining outside, and for me to tell you, you might want to take an umbrella, that's not going to cost you anything. You know, but if you need me to build one, then we need to talk. But
right.
I love, as we say down south, throwing ideas against the wall and seeing what sticks. And I learn from people when they call in with questions. So it's a win-win for me.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I meet people on Facebook. Facebook in particular for me is a gold mine. We've talked about that too.
Yes.
And I'm telling you, if you behave yourself on Facebook, and by that I mean don't jump on people's pages and start posting your links and your products. I mean, get to know them, follow them around, comment. If they post a really cute picture of their cat, like it.
Yeah.
Say something nice about their cat. We all love our pets. Get to know one another a little bit. And eventually what happens is, and if you're offering up enough information on your page or your LinkedIn, Twitter, if you're giving enough free content and actionable information, you become a resource and people start watching you and they start following you. And I know that this is what you're teaching your people to do. So if you don't mind, kind of walk me through how you help people in your industry, your industries, it sounds like you have several. How do you help them to just get past that, oh my gosh, now what, mentality?
Well, let's just go back for a minute to the guy that the architect. You know, when he said I can't do this, I thought, oh my gosh, this guy's in trouble, because he had everything else about him. He had the history, he had the portfolio, he had the education, he had the skill set, And his collateral material, we do a lot of collateral material development for our clients, and it was, he already had that done, and it was top notch. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And so if you read my columns, I do a lot of golf analogies. But one of the things that, you know, growing up, I had no idea I'd be doing what I was doing. I wanted to be a golfer, and it was something that just came natural to me. And so I use a lot of that, those analogies, like a golf lesson. You go, you know, see a pro, and you say, hey, I'm pushing the ball to the right. What do I need to do? The people that we work with, they've got most of it down. They know most of what they're doing, so it's just certain parts of the grip, the swing, their stance that we come in and we help them with. Mm-hmm. So in this situation, I knew that this guy, you know, he didn't have time to go take a Dale Carnegie course for months and do this. He needed something immediate. And so what we tried to do is we take, in this particular instance, we said, okay, look, let's take your fear of speaking and turn that into a positive. And then what you need to do in this situation, when you're in front of your first prospect, you just come out and say it. Say, look, if you're looking for a really polished presentation, that's not my skill set. But what I am passionate about is working with you and designing the building you need. And see, that's going to bridge a gap there, and it's going to create a little bit of empathy. The person at the other end may be the same way, just terrified of speaking to others. And so what we try to do is we, you know, using the golf analogy, is look at the swing. What works and what doesn't work? And let's enhance the stuff that's working, and let's improve the stuff that's not working.
Right. And how, I know last year your business building blog, which it is a sales and marketing blog, you do post a lot of stuff on there that is free. I mean, it's free, it's actionable, it's great advice. How did that help you win that contest?
Well, the contest itself,
I have to know.
When I found out about it, I absolutely had no intention of getting involved with it at all. And I'll tell you, there's a construction law blog that I'm a big fan of, Construction Law Musings by Chris Hill. And this guy he's just a rock star for what he writes about. And I said, well, there's just no way this guy will walk away with it. And so I subscribed to the blog and newsletter of the company that put this contest on, mm-hmm. And so next thing I know, I get a report on the contest, and I'm dadgum winning the thing, and somebody had nominated me, and then I was up, and the contest was it was definitely not a trial by jury type thing of professional writers or anything like that. It was just, you know, you can appeal to your fan base, if you will, your reader base, and say, hey, I'm in this contest, vote for me. And because so much of what we do is teach networking skills, I felt like, oh my gosh, now that I'm in this thing, I got to win it. And so I did exactly what you just talked about. You know, I sent three emails and just saying, hey, I'm in this contest. If you have time, and just click on the link and consider voting for me. I never, ever said vote for me. I just said consider voting for me.
Right.
And the updates would come, and, you know, my number two competitor, he would catch up to me, I'd send another email. And that speaks to me also of the importance of just not only having contacts, but being able to look at the contacts and understanding how you met that person, if it's not somebody you grew up with or, you know, like that, and being able to if you send out just three emails, then they need to be really smart and targeted of what you're sending them. So that's what happened, is that I just kept doing that until I had enough to win. And then they did a little story on the contest later, and the guy said, how did you win this? And I said, okay, I'll just go ahead and tell you. Because I know that my quote-unquote competitors, I don't consider them competitors, because there's more than enough business for everybody to go around. And yeah. And you just got to be smart in how you target that. And it's like you said earlier about the Facebook. Let people get to know you, and not just as a person who sells brand X or this, that, and the other. Let them get to know you. And if people like you, then they're going to want to do business with you.
Mm-hmm. And you can pick up referrals.
Absolutely.
From people who you have never done business with, because they like your persona. They like what you're doing. They see that you're helpful to other people.
Well,
it's an amazing thing. That's probably a whole other conversation.
Yeah. And, you know, it was just it was a lot of fun. And I was asked to be a judge this year, and I just kind of sat it out because I did it once, and I don't want to, I don't know, I just felt like I'd scratch that itch. So Michael Stone, he's on the West Coast, he won it this year. He's more geared towards residential, and we do have some residential clients, but most of ours in the commercial arena. So the whole contest was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed being a part of it.
I remember that because we rebuilt your website right around then.
Yeah, you did, and you did a fantastic job for it. And our story of how we met is a testament to the whole viral marketing thing, because you and I consider you a good friend. We've never met physically.
We
talk and chat all the time.
We
and,
do.
And you're a great resource. And then, so I don't hesitate recommending you, as you know, to other people.
Mm-hmm. I know. And that's how it happens. I mean, you meet somebody on Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn, and you build those relationships. And I'm not saying, you asked me the other day, my gosh, how do you have 4,000 some odd friends on Facebook? Well, it fluctuates, but I'm very busy on Facebook, and every day I go in and I look at the birthdays, and I go look at, you know, who the person is, because I may never have heard of them. At 4,000 some odd, you don't.
Right.
And, you know, if there's a lot of junk on their Facebook page, or I just don't know who they are, there's no possible way that we're ever going to do business or that I can be of assistance to them, I wish them happy birthday mentally. Unfriend them and move on and make room for somebody else. And you just build up those strong connections with people who do have interest in your products or, you know, your information, and that you also have, you know, you are interested in what they do. Yeah, it's kind of like walking into a meeting and, you know, you're in a suit, you're in a three-piece suit, you sell high-rises, and you buttonhole the Mary Kay lady. Really? I mean, come on. That's, what the heck are you doing there?
So, exactly.
So you have to be careful. You have to use some common sense and some dignity, which is very, very important as well.
Well, one of the things that I think the whole social media phenomenon is taught me to leverage as best I can is that we live in definitely in an imperfect world, as the electrical storm just showed us. But when you're selling a product or service, in the last 4 or 5 years, we've had a lot of clients in the retail sector. And as you know, that sector is just, from a construction standpoint, I mean, 4 years ago, Walmart was opening a brand new store every day.
I know.
And now everybody's shutting it down, so it's really, really tough. And if you have a product or service like you do in the construction industry, that you know there's a high probability that something's going to go wrong. A shipment's not going to make there. Materials aren't going to be there. Somebody's going to show up sick. It's that understanding and awareness that your client has with you as a person. Forget the business. That they know and they like you as a person. And as soon as you can let them know, hey, look, this job, if we go to business together and we do this 200-store rollout and it goes perfectly, it'll be the first one. And the difference is how we're going to take care of you when the hiccups start. And then it's like Jeffrey Gittimer says, he's a great sales guru and somebody that I follow. He said, people like to do business with people they like. And when the headache starts, people aren't going to call you up and start screaming and cussing at you so much if they know and like you. So not that you're going to be exonerated of any culpability on the job, but you'll be able to work through it a whole lot better.
Right, and they need to know that you're there for them, too.
Yeah, exactly.
You cannot disappear. You can't hide behind your secretary. You've got to be in there with your sleeves rolled up and fixing it. And if it's the problem with something that you do, you better darn apologize for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think
take ownership of it. Say, I am really sorry, and I'm working on it.
And that's what it's the humanity aspect of all that. One of the best investments I ever made in my entire career was back in my days at CMD. We had a big national building product customer. They would get a data push, and we had one lady who would take that data push, and she was like the blackjack dealer. She would deal out the project leads to the sales force. And if it got stuck in the pipe, so to speak, between here and New York, then she was the one that her life was made miserable. And I remember my account manager came to me and said, you know, we had a data push, it didn't go through, and so let's call her Sue, is all upset again. I mean, she was not just upset, she was ready to climb a rifle, I mean, with a rifle to a water tower and start shooting at us. So I just said, okay, do this. I said, go find a, you know, a florist up there and sent her a $100 bouquet. And that was the absolute best. And just tell her we're sorry. We'll fix it.
Right.
But tell her that we know. It's show her more than we're just sorry. It's easy to say you're sorry. But that one little investment, I mean, she called me back and just, you would have thought I hung the moon. And it didn't make her day any less, you know, of a headache. But it showed her that you cared. And you know, we're not just, you're more than just a name in a spreadsheet to us.
And see, I think that's brilliant. I mean, that is really good customer service, but beyond, and customer service just is, it almost has a bad name these days because as Americans, I'm finding, and this is just a generalization, but I'm finding that customer service, particularly in public, is just bloody awful. I'm just going to say it. It's just awful.
Yeah.
And nobody seems to really care or want to do anything about it. And, you know, people vote with their feet. They vote with their wallets. And I'm talking at consumer level, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're in business like we are, you need to make your customers happy. And I don't mean, you know, give them everything they want. Clearly you can't. But, you know, sending flowers to somebody who's really upset is just brilliant because it does show that human side. And listen, I hear your pain and, oh, gosh, you know, smell these. I hope you feel better. We're working on it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just it's trying to empathize and realize that, hey, I'm in Atlanta and I'm going to go home this evening and I'm not going to be there till 10 o'clock, you know, taking angry calls from people on the West Coast because they didn't get their data. So it's just, you know, it's trying to project a sense of, hey, we're all in this together and and everybody wants to make a dollar, but let's make a dollar together and do it in a way that we can get along as best we can and everybody have some fun along the way.
Right.
I'm big on having fun while I work.
I know. Well, I want to get, we'll come back to this, but I have to ask you, your coffee blog.
Okay.
Tell all that. And the reason I ask is because I am not a coffee drinker.
I know.
You well know. And what, didn't you almost cut me off of Facebook one day when I had
to really think about it over the weekend.
I almost lost a friend. I'm not a really, my coffee pot is in the house from Halloween night to New Year's Day. And then it goes back out in the garage.
But I don't see how you do it.
I don't like the taste of it.
I love coffee. The whole coffee blog thing came about in years ago. I was working with this company, and I had an office in their office, and I love coffee. And so, about 3 o'clock every day, in the break room, they had one of these coffee makers that you could only make one pot. And so, you know, it came in the bag, and you had to dump the whole bag in, and it had the reservoir of hot water. You fill it up, and you had to make a pot. And so I felt bad that I would, you know, go in there and make a cup of coffee and come back later, and they'd be sitting there. So it was a pretty big bill. And so we're sort of, you know, I'd be walking through the hall with my coffee, and somebody goes, hey, did you just make some coffee? I go, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love coffee, especially a cup in the afternoon. So long story short, I had a...
You gathered up a crew.
Yeah, I had an email list of about 10 people. And so if I was traveling, they would be bummed out because they wouldn't get the 3 o'clock pot alert. And so that just, when I left, when the contract was over, they were all bumming, saying, oh, no, who's gonna alert us of the 3 o'clock pot? So just as a whim, I created the 3 o'clock pot blog, and I've got those same people still subscribed that I'll send them out and say, hey, you know, it's 3 o'clock, let's make one more cup of joe before to get us to five bells. And so that just sort of came as a whim, and it's a lot of fun. I have a lot of people, you know, if I don't post it, they'll write me back, say, hey, what's going on? And and so it's just something I do for fun. I've got a couple of other fun blogs that I do that are just nonsensical, but I have a lot of fun with them.
Right. Well, I've looked at your coffee blog just kind of briefly, you know, after you kind of almost cut me out of your life. And I went and looked at your coffee blog. Quick question, have you monetized that at all?
I haven't. I did go so far as...
Have I taught you nothing?
I know, and I plan to do that. At least get me some Starbucks coupons or something out of it. But I did go, when I first started traveling, back in, like I said, in my previous life, the first trip I ever made, I was with the company about 3 months. And, you know, and I was just out of school. And so the president came and he said, hey, we just bought a company in Los Angeles. And... would you be willing to go out there 1 week a month? And I'm like, well, are you crazy? Of course I would. So I went out there every month for 2 years.
Oh,
and
gosh.
So when I went out there for – one of my old college roommates moved out there and worked for the company. So I would go out on the weekends, and we would, you know, just go hang out at the beach or go up to Hollywood and see all the touristy sites. And so when I was in Hollywood once, I got this Hollywood mug at MGM, and I thought, okay, I'm going to start collecting coffee mugs, because I really figured that was going to be the extent of my business travels. Once we got that company transitioned, then I'd be done. But and I was real fortunate in that my time at CMD, I got to spend weeks and weeks and sometimes months in just about every major city. So I started this coffee mug collection, which is now just boxes and boxes. I kind of now wish I'd started, like, you know, maybe a thimble collection or something. So I did go and start. I started taking pictures of my mugs with the goal of, you know, having mug of the moment or mug of the month and that I'm drinking out of. And because I do swap them out.
Kind of like Larry Winkett and his boots.
Yeah, I do swap them out depending on the season or what I'm going through as far as, you know, my task load. There's certain mugs that inspire me and one day I'll get something out of that other than just
you should. Well, you know, I almost never recommend that people put Google AdWords on their sites or blogs.
Yeah,
but actually, yours would be perfect for it.
I don't.
So you
do
might
want to
consider
AdWords.
That.
But that
no,
that would be one.
Not
I would
AdWords.
Do.
I'm sorry. AdSense. Not AdWords. But you know, it would lend itself perfectly for that. I mean, rarely recommend it, but every once in a while, one kind of jumps out and shouts at me. And that's one of them.
Yeah. I have to do that. I just got to find the time.
I know.
Which is why I drink so much coffee.
Oh gosh, I should learn, but I really. And I know I'm going to offend you terribly, and you'll probably take me off of Facebook again. Well, you never did. You threatened. You didn't actually do it. But I will make a pot of coffee and forget that I made it because it shuts itself off automatically. And if I don't smell it, I don't go drink it.
Oh.
And the next day I'm like, oh, and I don't want to pour it down the drain. That stuff's expensive.
Yeah.
So I'll warm it up in the microwave, and I'll drink my stale coffee for about 2 or 3 days. So how do you feel now? Are you queasy?
Yes, I am. I actually had we had just a massive workload once, and I hired a neighbor to come help with some marketing stuff, and she's a big coffee drinker, and so one day she came in and she goes to the coffee pot, and there was some left over, and she pours it into a cup and sticks it in the microwave. I was like, oh, what are you doing?
I'm
just having some coffee. I said, no. I said, we may go to the poorhouse, but we're going to go to the poorhouse drink good, hot, strong coffee.
Oh, God.
I would not let her make the coffee. But I do love
here's
it.
Here's my question. Doesn't it lose potency after a day or two? Am I just not even getting any caffeine after
I
two or three days?
So.
I need to know.
No, I think
because I will pour it down the drain at that point.
Yeah, the big rage is these one-cup coffee machines that you buy, the little butter tub-looking thing to make the coffee in. And I buy my coffee in bulk at one of the big warehouse clubs, and it's roasted by Starbucks, and we grind it, and I make 2 cups in the morning, and then after that it's 1 cup at a time. I like it to be hot, and I like it to be strong, and I like it to be fresh. So that's the one area I am a bit of a snob. If I do that and forget about it, then I'll make another cup.
I can't do it. I really just need to not even bother, truthfully. I don't know why I even go to the trouble, because every once in a while I think, oh, you know, a cup of coffee sounds good.
Yeah.
And then several hours later, wait a second. I'm wandering around looking for my cup of coffee. It's sitting down somewhere. So
maybe one day you'll see the light and you'll be one of us.
You think? I'll try. I really, really will try. Okay, let's go back to social media. I had to get off on that because it's part of social media as well. And the reason y'all who are listening and who will be listening in the future, I did have a reason for going down that road, away from construction, away from everything else. What Bobby has done by creating that, you know, that separate blog, which is, you know, purely entertainment for him and purely a passion, is he's now sharing his personality. And that's part of what we're talking about earlier. You have to be somebody that people can know, like, and trust, period. That's all there is to it.
Well, I agree. I think that, you know, people that know me, I do like to have fun, and I do love to work hard. I mean, when I first got out of school, I had a finance professor who taught the Federal Reserve and all that, and, you know, on the final you had to trace a check from the time you write it to how that bank gets this bank's money and this, that, and the other. And at that time, I bought one of these home study courses on real estate, how to buy real estate with no money down. And I actually bought a house as a college student with no money down, and my roommates and I moved into our apartment and kept that house for a while. But he said, is anybody here interested in investing in real estate? And so I raised my hand, and he sort of mentored me, you know, outside the classroom on all that. And so the day we go into our final, he goes, I just want to thank you all for being a good class, and I'm retiring, and, you know, this is my last class, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, holy cow, this guy looks so young. Of course, I was, you know, a young guy then, so, but he was 42 years old, and he had bought and pyramided a bunch of properties, sold it, and retired at 42. And I thought, that's me. I want to be that guy. And so for years, I mean, above my desk was a picture of a sailboat that had my 40th birthday on it, and that was my goal, was to, you know, retire into the Caribbean and at 40 years old. But as I got into my career and developed, you know, the skill sets that I have and what I do for a living, I love what I do. And and I don't want to retire. You look at the rich guys, you know, Donald Trump and Steve Jobs. These guys are working all the time because they love what
they
work
till they die. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
Which is a good thing when you look at my 401k.
I know. I love what I do, and it's a darn good thing because, oh, my gosh.
But the fun part about it is just that I do like to have fun. I love to work hard in situations, and if the coffee blog helps people see that part of me, then that's great. And because again, it's, you know, like Dale Carnegie said, people like to do business with people they like, and so if it's tough to a certain extent to get to know people just from a LinkedIn post or a Twitter post,
right.
But if you can go beyond that and show them a little bit more about what you're like. That's why when I did get laid off after CMD, they sent all of us to this company that, you know, redid resumes for executives who hadn't been in the job market for years. And prior to that, you know, we did hiring, and I'm dating myself here. The rule was you don't have a resume longer than a page because no one will read it. So when I got to this two-day class, they were saying, no, it's all about search engines and it's all about, you know, keywords. So they suggested when you started reading off the things that at the beginning of the show that I do for fun, those are called hooks. And there's a great book out there by Harvey McKay. He wrote a book called How to Swim with the Sharks Without Getting Eaten Alive.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
and his main business is he makes envelopes. And but he wrote that book, and he's written several since that became bestsellers, and he does public speaking. And he said in there, he said, when someone says, well, what do? He goes, I make envelopes, I write books, I speak publicly, and I play tennis and run, and I'm trying to figure out a way to get paid on those last two things. And he says, I usually get a chuckle.
Elevator pitch.
Yeah, yep, I get a chuckle out of it. He said, but what I've done is I've extended five hooks that people can, you know, if people like, you know, philosophy, or if they like Brazilian jiu-jitsu or golf or tennis, they're going to want to talk to me about those things. And then, if you know, and then as opposed to, oh, you're a sales coach. Okay, see you later.
Right. Right. What does that mean anyway?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one of the things that I notice, and I would like, you know, for you to speak to this, is there some big, big mistakes that business owners make on social media. And I see some glaring ones. And from people, you know, who look, honestly, they look pretty interesting, and their company looks interesting, but they just immediately turn me off. So, and it's kind of hard to overcome that first impression. So what, Bobby, what are some of the biggest mistakes that business owners in your industry, what is it that they're doing wrong in social media?
I think that the first and biggest mistake that they make is ignore it. I tell people that, they're, you know, go back 3-4 years when this whole thing started percolating, and mm-hmm. I thought anybody who – my first impression of a blog was, you know, the musings of an egomaniac. I thought, what person would care that I would put,
right.
you know, my thoughts online like that? But I really, and it's the same with Twitter. And I've even written blogs called I Love It When I'm Wrong, you know, and I give examples of situations like this where my first impression is so totally wrong. And
right.
I didn't see any practical business application for Twitter at first. And then I got to understand it. And definitely went from an agnostic to an evangelist on the whole thing. I think so. The first thing they do is they ignore it, and then the second thing is, you know, is that they don't use it properly in the sense that, like you mentioned earlier, if you behave yourself and you know, if you get in there and you start ranting about things that are opinion pieces that no one really cares about, I mean, you're not going to change, you know, anything that goes on in government or anything like that by
voting.
So, yeah.
No, not with Twitter, but, yeah, I'll be at the ballot box, let me tell you that much.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
but, so, I mean, those are two things that are passionate to me, you know, and, but I don't try to inject those too much into, you know, my social presence.
I do the same thing. I try to be careful, but every once in a while you'll see something that is just so nasty, you just have to comment on it. It's like, are you kidding?
Oh, yeah.
Really? But, you know, I do try to keep that down. You know, like your mama told you, don't talk about religion and politics.
That's right.
And mama knows best. But you're right. I think what you said that really jumped out at me is that people ignore it, and that's a huge mistake because they don't know how to operate it.
Well, I think it scares them. Like, and it did me a little bit at first because, again, it's the unknown. You sort of feel like, you know, when you get a new piece of technology, I'll share a quick story with you. I had a client in Orlando once, and the project involved working with, I got to be a little careful, this guy who was really, really rich. There's no easy way to say it. I mean, this guy was mega rich. He had a boat. He didn't, you know, stick this in your face. I just sort of found out through osmosis that he leased his boat for $75,000 a week. So this, we're talking, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars rich. Well, after I got
to
know the guy.
So it wasn't a P-Rogue.
Yeah.
Down here we have P-Rogues. It wasn't one of those.
Oh, it was amazing. And he was a great guy, super nice guy. And so after I got to know him a while, he had this cell phone the size of a Basswegian. I mean, it was really a brick. And I said, you know, Mark, I said, they make these things smaller these days. And he laughed and he held it up. He said, yeah, but you know what? I know how to use this one. He was so afraid of getting a new phone
because
he didn't want to have to learn it. And I think that's a large part of the whole social media thing is that people, you know, they see Twitter, they hear about, you know, all these things that are involved with that, and it sort of intimidates them a little bit. And I tell them, I said, look, when you go to the Wall Street Journal's homepage, and they've got an icon for you to follow them on Twitter, you got to start paying attention to this.
Yeah. And, you know, it used to be a year or two ago, I think it's even as early as a year ago, you didn't see Facebook fan page badges in people's windows. You do now. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
JCPenney, when I first saw JCPenney on Twitter and Facebook, I went, aha. I mean, I was already in both, and I had positioned my clients in both. I mean, I was one of the early adopters, but when JCPenney and Overstock.com and all of a sudden they're on Facebook, you know, people start paying attention going,
Yeah.
Let me see what they're doing.
And there's
You find out about sales through those pages. I mean, they reach out to you. It's amazing, and it's come a long, long ways just in how they're able to adapt to these Facebook fan pages. It's incredible.
Yeah, I had lunch, actually coffee, imagine that, earlier this week with the one of the guys from the alumni group where I went to school, went to the University of Georgia, and he was telling me about the text messaging aspect of business. And see, again, that's another thing that I feel like I've got a pretty good handle on the social media, but as far as advertising on text messaging, I'm not your guy. But as he was explaining that to me, it's like, holy cow, I didn't even think of that. And I was sort of envisioning, because he had some numbers. He had, like, you know, they know that you go to Starbucks a lot, so then they can send you a coupon from Starbucks saying, hey, you're there, here's 10% off of this, or here's half price on this. And it's really, really amazing how they can drill down to such exact awareness of their client base and their customers.
Right.
So you got to pay attention.
That's exactly right. You do, and you have to watch, observe, and, you know, sometimes just implement these things. And you have to get started by being on Facebook, the Holy Trinity, Facebook, LinkedIn, you know, Twitter. You have to be on those. You have to have a presence.
You need
to branch out to Dig, and, you know, there's a lot of other places. But if you don't want to do it yourself, honestly, find somebody who can do it for you. It is that important.
I agree.
It really, really is.
I don't do my own taxes. I don't do my own lawyering. And so if that intimidates you, if you're listening out there, then definitely look into somebody who can help you.
Right, right. Now, Bobby, apart from social media, what are some of the common challenges that companies you work with face these days in these pretty tough times?
I think easily the biggest challenge that they have is they're too busy. We do a lot of business development consulting, and by that I mean coming in and seeing, let's look at where your last 10 contracts came from and drilling down to that sweet spot of where they need to spend their time. And what they don't understand is, I'm too busy, is that if you're too busy, then if you get more opportunities, then you can charge more. It's the old supply and demand thing. You know, I'm too busy to do this. Well, what's your profit margin? They don't even know their profit margin. I think that the biggest mistake, they just don't have a good understanding of their business. As long as they know that they can make payroll, then they're happy. And that's just to me, lazy, being a lazy business person.
That would put you a dime away from bankruptcy if you weren't careful.
Yeah, again, going back to use a golf analogy, I am happy with the 15 handicap. Well,
right.
You can get it down to the single digits and you'd be even happier than that.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, I know that your construction is tough right now all over. Are you seeing any changes that are noteworthy, and maybe people are saying, well, you know, I can't build malls right now, but I can, you know, maybe go into another market temporarily. Are you seeing any kind of shifts?
Absolutely. People have to reinvent themselves all the time. And
all
typically
the time. Yep.
In the construction industry, when new buildings slow down, renovations pick up. I know that with the retailers, that some of the retail companies that I'm working with, again, Walmart, they're not opening a store a day, but they're doing a lot with their renovations. And remodels, and people are touching up and sprucing up. And then, you know, even sort of like the subcontractors, they're looking for other ways. What else can I do? What else can I provide other than the service that's basically my foundation? And so, and then they're partnering with other companies. That's another thing, is that I teach as far as making sure you've got a network group that that you're communicating with on a regular basis of people that aren't your competitor, but they're basically barking up the same tree as you, and y'all share leads, you share, you know, you share contact names and such as that. And then there's going to come the project from time to time where the owner is going to want what we call one throat to choke. And so if they need my services and I can, you know, do 8 of the 10 that they need, but I know that Denise can do those other two, I'm going to offer them a turnkey package. But I can't do that unless I've got a Denise waiting in the wings or somebody else that can do the other things that I can't do. So you've got to expand your horizons. Don't stay so focused on, you know, that one particular core service or good that you offer, and be able to, you got to think on your feet. You've got to get to the line of scrimmage and call an audible from time to time.
Right. Well, you just described how my business runs. I mean, I can do it all, literally, from social media to website development and everything in between. Should I? No. I built a team. I have a heck of a team.
Absolutely. And I've used your services, and you're phenomenal.
I know, huh? Thank you.
I had to throw in our Chip and Dale line there.
Listen, Bobby, where can people find you on the web? You've got 2 or 3 locations where they can find you.
I've got the easiest way is they can just go to bobbydarnell.com, and there's links to my business. But my business is cmconl.com, or they can just go to buildingnewbusiness.com, and then they're all interconnected, so they can find me in any of those ways.
Good enough. And it's Bobby. Spell it for them, because some people may not know how to spell Darnell.
BobbyDarnell. .com, and you got the access. You get the coffee blog link there, and then you get I do a comic strip. You can see that on there, and so you should be able to find me.
Whoever's listening, you need to find Bobby on Facebook. He has a Friday thing. I know we're about out of time, but you have to explain this whole Friday thing, because I get caught up in it. And every time, I'm going to tell you all right now, every time I think I'm just the smartest thing that ever walked the earth, and I'm pretty smart, Bobby just knocks the stuffing out of me with this Friday thing. You know, I'll get involved for a while, and then all of a sudden, you know, he'll see me throwing my hands up in the air and say, well, I'm out. My brain just went dead. explain to me
I don't know.
You do on Fridays, because it's hilarious.
I can't remember the genesis of it, but I get this little pun email, and I love humor. I love puns. You'll get an understanding if you go to my comic strip that I do. It'll explain a lot about me. But we'll put this pun out on Facebook, and I'll change it to have to do with one of my neighbors. And then there's just a core group of us that'll get on there, and then they'll add to it or stretch it, or you know, and it will go the whole day. And mm-hmm. some of the guys I've got a doctor on there, an old fraternity brother is a doctor. I've got an attorney friend that I grew up with. He's a prosecutor, and so everybody will just add
to
it.
I'm running with the big dogs.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things that, you know, for my clients out there, I'm not doing it all the time, but usually if I have to print a document or I'm waiting for a phone call or something, or I'm on hold, I'll just zip on there and punch one out. But it's a good stress breaker, and it's a lot of fun. And there's going to be another one here in within the hour, so you need to jump on there.
I will, because I remember a few weeks ago, a month or so ago, it was like, where is it? I was emailing you, where is it? What's going on? Where is it, Bobby?
You can tell from
I was searching for veins. It was terrible. I was all over the map. But they're so funny. And, you know, like, see, every once in a while I think, okay, I can do this. I can stretch my imagination far enough. No, I can't. You guys beat me every single time.
Well, listen, don't let me kid you. I will jump on Google to try to find one more word that I can use to milk this thing.
And every once in a while I think, okay, my comeback was brilliant. That's the end of it. Darn, if one of your guys doesn't just get in there and up me one, I'm like,
I know. There's some really amazing people that chime in on that.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot of fun.
Well, anytime I feel cocky, I go over there. And, you know, I'm back to normal right afterwards. Just a lot of fun. Well, Bobby, thank you so much for being with me here today. And thank you for carrying the show while I had my power outage. I appreciate it. And you've given some really great advice to our listeners who are listening now and who will, you know, download later. And I know they appreciate it because there's a ton of content in there. So thank you all for being here today. And the show will be available for download in about an hour, maybe less. And this is Denise Griffiths and Bobby Darnell wishing you a wonderful weekend. And I'll see you next week. Thank you, Bobby.
Thanks, Denise.
Bye.
Please leave your message after the tone.